you're watching someone use Claude, right? And they open a new tab, type in maybe three vague words, like, I don't know, write a script.
Oh, yeah, the classic three-word prompt.
Right. They hit enter, and they get back this totally generic, bland response. And then they close the tab, lean back, and wonder what all this artificial intelligence hype is actually about.
It's just wild to see.
It really is. I mean, it's honestly like buying a multi-million dollar supercomputer and using it exclusively to play solitaire.
That is the perfect way to put it, yeah.
So today, we are tearing down the workflows of the 0.1% of power users, the people who are utilizing this exact same tool, but they're saving like 30 plus hours a week.
Exactly.
We're doing a deep dive into a comprehensive guide from popularatools.ai. It details 12 specific techniques to transform Claude from a basic, you know, chat interface into a fully functional, highly integrated AI employee.
And the defining characteristic of that top tier of power users, it isn't natural talent. I think that's super important to establish up front.
Right. It's not magic.
No, it's not about being a savant at machine learning or, you know, possessing some secret coding knowledge. The difference between the person playing solitaire and the person building an entire automated business, it comes down entirely to workflow structure. It's about establishing reliable memory for the AI, creating systematic instructions, and eventually giving the intelligence the actual digital hands required to do the work.
Digital hands. I love that. But before we can give it hands, we have to actually know how to speak to it, right?
We do. Yeah.
So the guide establishes a baseline with this framework it calls the ultimate prompt engineering template. And honestly, you can just ignore the massive libraries of complex prompt structures people try to sell you online.
Oh, please do ignore those.
Right. This entire template fits on one screen. It's just four pillars: role, task, context, and constraints.
Keep it simple.
Exactly. So you define the role, telling it to act as a top-tier systems architect or whatever. The task is the specific deliverable. The context is your current situation, like your budget or past data. And constraints are the hard limits.
Like telling it, do not use these three specific Python libraries.
Yeah. Or maintain a strictly professional tone without buzzwords. But I have to push back here for a second.
Go for it.
Because if I'm a developer trying to save time, stopping to write out this massive multivariable template every single time I want a piece of code refactored, I mean, that feels incredibly counterproductive. Doesn't that friction totally defeat the purpose of having a fast AI assistant?
Well, it absolutely would if you just stop there.
Okay.
The magic of this template isn't actually the four pillars themselves. It's the final instruction you append to them.
The magic line.
The magic line. The guide is very specific about this. So after laying out your role, task, context, and constraints, you add a single line. Ask me clarifying questions one at a time until you are 95% confident you can complete the task successfully.
Wow. So you're explicitly telling it not to do the work yet.
Exactly. You are forcing the model to pause its execution instinct. Because, you know, large language models are fundamentally designed to predict the next token, right?
Mm-hmm. The next word.
Right. Which means they just want to start generating an answer immediately based on whatever scraps of information you gave them.
Even if it's incomplete.
Even if it's completely fragmented. So by appending that clarifying question line, you basically short-circuit the guessing game.
Interesting.
The AI has to look at your prompt, identify the logical gaps in your context, and actually ask you to fill those holes. And the process of answering those specific questions sharpens your own request.
So you're figuring it out together, basically.
Yeah, you end up front-loading the alignment, which saves you hours of frustrating revisions down the line.
I see. That shifts the dynamic entirely. It's treating the AI less like a vending machine and more like an intellectual sparring partner.
Which is exactly what you want.
And that ties perfectly into the next technique, because I have a major issue with how most people use AI for brainstorming right now.
Oh, let me guess.
They use it as a, well, I call it a glazing partner, a yes machine that just validates every terrible idea you throw at it.
Oh, absolutely. It's the worst.
Right. If you say, I want to rewrite my entire application in a brand new, untested programming language, the AI will immediately say, what a visionary approach. Here are five steps to get started.
It just wants to please you.
Exactly. It adds zero strategic value, because it's programmed to be helpful, and it misinterprets helpful as agreeable.
Yeah, surface-level agreement feels really satisfying in the moment, but it is strategically useless for developers. To break that habit, you have to actively instruct Claude to stress test your thinking.
How do you do that exactly?
You just append phrases like, argue with me. Why am I wrong about this approach? Or identify the blind spots and weakest assumptions in this architecture.
I like that.
Right? So if you're a founder looking at 5 different database structures and they all seem plausible, the sparring approach forces the AI to conduct a real trade-off analysis.
The guide actually uses the phrase, rip this apart like a skeptical investor would.
Yes.
I just love the aggression of that prompt. It demands critical pushback.
Because it changes the AI's internal persona from a passive assistant to a proactive advisor. It makes you think, what specific data would you need to actually convince that skeptic?
It forces you to build a more robust argument.
Exactly. Or recognize a flaw before you commit resources to it.
So beyond strategy, there's also just the day-to-day friction of learning new things or debugging code. And the guide introduces this 2-week challenge that targets this exact friction.
This is a great challenge.
It really is. So instead of heading over to Stack Overflow when you hit a wall or, you know, dropping a comment on a tutorial video and praying for a response 3 days later.
Which never happens.
Right. Never happens. Instead, you take a screenshot of the error, drop it into Claude, and just ask it to explain what went wrong.
The behavioral shift here is profound. When you realize you have a resource that is infinitely patient, completely non-judgmental, and available at 3 a.m.
It's a total game changer.
It dramatically accelerates your learning curve. Because if you don't understand a concept, you can ask it to explain the same fundamental mechanism 4 times in a row, using different analogies.
And it will never sigh or roll its eyes at you?
Never. It will never become condescending. It completely removes the social anxiety from the learning process.
I need that level of patience in my daily life, honestly.
Don't we all?
So, okay, we have the communication down. We're front-loading alignment. We're sparring. We're learning. But here is the wall I constantly hit. And this is my biggest pet peeve with AI right now.
What's that?
Starting a new chat session feels like onboarding a brand new employee who suffers from severe amnesia every single morning.
Yes, the blank slate problem.
It's exhausting. You have to re-explain the core business, re-establish the brand voice, reminded of all the coding standards it learned yesterday. We need a way to build muscle memory into this workflow.
And this brings us to the technical architecture of AI memory. So if you're using the web interface, you rely on the project's feature to establish a baseline context.
Right.
But for developers who are operating inside their terminal with Claude code, the equivalent mechanism is the claude.md file.
The markdown file. So for anyone unfamiliar, markdown is just a very lightweight way to format plain text. You use hashtags for headers, asterisks for bullet points. But why does the AI prefer this format?
Because large language models thrive on highly structured text. Markdown provides that clean structure without the bloated syntax of like HTML or rich text formats.
That makes sense.
So a claude.md file is simply a plain text file that sits in the root directory of your project. And Claude is programmed to automatically read this file at the start of every single session.
Oh, automatically.
Automatically. This is where you store your global variables, your specific architecture decisions, your preferred code libraries, and your absolute hard constraints. It basically acts as the AI's long-term memory for that specific code base.
Okay, I understand the theory, but I know my own habits. I will write a pristine documentation file on day one of a project, and I will literally never look at it again until something catastrophic happens and the project is on fire.
Yeah, manual documentation always degrades.
It always does.
But the guide actually anticipates that exact human flaw. The power move here is what they call the self-updating memory trick.
Okay, what is that?
At the end of a highly productive coding session, you don't manually update the markdown file yourself.
Oh, thank goodness.
Right. You ask Claude. You say, based on our work today, what are the most critical architectural decisions and constraints you should extract? Update the claude.md file to reflect these new standards.
Wait, so you are making the AI maintain its own documentation based on the context of the work it just finished doing.
Exactly. You're creating living, breathing memory. It evolves naturally alongside your project, and it completely eliminates the administrative overhead that usually causes documentation to fall out of date.
That is brilliant. Okay, so that covers remembering the global rules. But how do we get the AI to remember specific multi-step actions? Because the guide introduces these things called Claude skills.
Right.
So if ChatGPT has custom GPTs, Claude has skills. But the guide argues these are significantly more powerful because they're designed to execute code and can actually be chained together automatically.
They are incredibly powerful.
So instead of typing out a long prompt every time, you break your workflow into mini playbooks. Like you might create a slash research skill, a slash outline skill, and a slash writer skill.
Exactly.
But my immediate instinct as a developer looking to save time is to just go to GitHub, find a massive repository of community-built skills, and download them all.
No, no.
Why not? That seems like the fastest path to power usage.
It's actually the most common trap for new users.
Yeah.
Because generic skills yield generic results.
Oh, I see.
If you download someone else's slash writer skill, you are adopting their workflow, their tone, and their structural preferences. The absolute most effective skills are custom compiled from your own unique workflow patterns.
But I don't want to code all of those from scratch.
You don't have to. The mechanism for building them is surprisingly organic. So after you have a really productive back and forth session where Claude perfectly executes a complex task exactly the way you like it, you simply instruct it. You say, based on this specific conversation, extract the workflow and create a custom skill. Ask me clarifying questions until you are 95% confident.
Huh. The magic line makes a return.
It is universally applicable. Claude will just scan the chat history, identify the repeatable patterns in your requests, and package them into a tailored executable command.
You're essentially compiling your own conversational successes into automated tools. That is so cool.
Exactly.
But even with custom skills and an evolving markdown memory file, we have to talk about a very real technical limitation here.
The context window.
The context window. Because as a chat session gets longer and longer, the AI starts to get noticeably forgetful. Like, it starts making weird mistakes and ignoring rules we established an hour ago.
Yeah, this is a fundamental constraint of how current large language models process data. So the context window is essentially the AI's short-term working memory, and it's measured in tokens.
Right, tokens.
You can think of tokens as chunks of words or pieces of code. And as you dump more code, more text, and more instructions into a single chat, that window just fills up.
It gets crowded.
It gets very crowded. And when it gets crowded, the AI's attention mechanism begins to degrade. It actually loses track of the core priorities that were established at the very beginning of the session.
Because they've been pushed too far down in its working memory.
Exactly.
So the guide references some Google research to validate a fix for this. And honestly, the solution sounds almost too simple.
It's very simple.
You just repeat your core instructions. So if I'm building a new feature in an existing app, I might have a text expansion shortcut set up on my keyboard that says, crucial reminder, make minimal changes, reuse existing UI components, do not import new external libraries.
Yes.
And I will literally paste that exact block of text into the chat two or three times during a long debugging session.
Because that repetition acts as an anchor. It forces those critical constraints back to the top of the AI's attention mechanism. You don't repeat the entire Claude.md file.
Yeah.
Just the absolute highest priorities for that specific task.
Right.
Think of it like managing a junior developer. The constraints you consistently reiterate are the ones that actually dictate the quality of the final output.
Speaking of managing a junior developer, let's look at what the guide considers the single highest leverage habit for software engineers, plan mode.
Oh, this is crucial.
Because we have memory, we have custom skills, and we understand context windows. But when we apply all of this to a complex code base, how do we prevent the AI from going totally rogue and breaking the build?
It happens.
I have a personal horror story here. I asked an AI to optimize a database query, let it just run with the task, and went to grab coffee. I came back to find it had imported three heavy deprecated libraries, rewritten a core authentication module for no reason, and created this tangled mess.
Oh no.
I spent 4 hours doing manual git reverts just to get back to zero.
See, that is the exact scenario plan mode is designed to eliminate. Power users actually spend 80 to 90% of their AI interaction time entirely in plan mode.
90%.
90%. This is pure risk management. Before a single line of executable code is written, you are engaging in a back and forth dialogue solely focused on the approach.
Okay, so what are you asking it?
You're asking it to outline the file changes, justify its choice of libraries, detail the potential downstream effects.
Mm-hmm.
You only toggle over to edit mode when the plan is completely flawless.
It's the developer's version of the carpenter's rule, right? Measure twice, cut once.
Yeah.
Spending 90% of the time planning ensures surgical, minimal changes that actually respect your existing architecture. It's the only way to ship clean code on the first try.
Absolutely.
But when things do inevitably go wrong, because no system is perfect, right?
Never.
The guide emphasizes this organizing principle using GitHub. Now, developers already use GitHub to version control their code, but the insight here applies to the AI workflow itself. It frames GitHub as this ultimate save system with unlimited undo capabilities.
Right, because power users treat their prompts, their custom skills, and their AI configuration files with the exact same rigor they treat their actual code.
That makes total sense.
Your main branch on GitHub represents your stable state. So if you want Claude to attempt building a highly experimental, complex feature, you do not let it touch the main branch.
You spin up a new branch.
You spin up a new branch. You let the AI experiment. If it hallucinates or breaks the application, you simply delete the branch. The stable state remains untouched.
So simple, but so effective.
And more importantly, by storing your Claude.md files and custom skill definitions in GitHub, you're actually version controlling the AI's brain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so if a new skill suddenly starts producing bad results, you can just revert the skill itself to a previous version.
So the AI's logic is backed up just like the software it is building.
Exactly.
This is all incredibly powerful. But we have kind of reached a bottleneck here.
How so?
Well, the AI has meticulous plans, it remembers our rules, it has custom skills, but it is still trapped inside a chat interface or a terminal window.
Right.
I still have to look at its perfect plan, manually open my files, copy the code, paste it, open my email, draft a message, and hit send. How do we give this intelligence actual hands to touch my local files and cloud applications?
Okay, so this is where we transition from having a highly capable consultant to a fully autonomous employee. And the mechanism for this is MCP, the Model Context Protocol.
MCP. I hear this acronym constantly right now. But how does it actually work securely? Because giving an AI access to my local hard drive or my Stripe account sounds like a massive security vulnerability.
It does sound scary, but it's best to think of MCP as a highly secure digital courier system.
It's a courier system.
Yeah, so in the past, to give an AI access to an app, you had to hand over your API keys, which is essentially giving it the master password to do whatever it wanted.
Right, which is terrifying.
Very. But MCP changes the architecture entirely. Instead of direct access, MCP establishes isolated specific servers on your machine.
Okay.
So say you have an MCP server just for your Google Drive. When Claude needs a document, it cannot just rummage through your hard drive. It has to ask the MCP courier for that specific file.
I see.
The courier checks the exact permissions you've set up, retrieves only that file, and hands it back to Claude. The AI never has direct access to the underlying system, which mitigates the security risk while enabling vast capabilities.
And the most practical part of the guide is how it suggests setting this up, because you don't need to be a senior backend engineer configuring OAuth tokens.
Not at all.
You literally just open Claude and type, here is my tech stack, Gmail, Stripe, Notion, and Slack. Which of these have reliable MCP servers? And can you walk me through setting each one up step by step?
Yeah, it literally spoon feeds you the terminal commands to establish the couriers.
It totally democratizes automation.
It really does. But establishing the connection is only the baseline. The pinnacle technique, the workflow the guide suggests every user should ultimately be working toward, is stacking.
Stacking.
You stack your custom skills with MCP.
So this combines the what with the how.
Exactly.
Skills tell the AI what the standard operating procedure is, and MCP gives it the digital hands to actually execute that procedure across your applications.
Right.
The guide uses a real-world example of a custom command called /crosspost. Can you explain the mechanics of how this stacked command actually functions?
Yeah. So when you type that single command, /crosspost, an entire orchestrated workflow triggers.
Just from that one command.
Just that one command. First, Claude uses an MCP courier to securely search your local Google Drive for new unpublished video files.
Okay.
Once it locates them, it uses another tool to transcribe the audio. It then runs that transcript through your custom writing skill, which dictates your specific brand tone, to generate distinct captions tailored for LinkedIn and Twitter.
Wow.
It might then trigger an image generation API to create an infographic based on the transcript. And finally, it uses another MCP connection to log the entire campaign into your Airtable database and schedules the posts via an external tool.
That is insane.
All of that cascades from one simple slash command.
It's a phenomenal workflow. But I have to ask the obvious question here.
What's that?
We've had automation tools like Zapier, Make.com, and NAIN for years. These platforms specialize in moving data from one app to another. So why go through the trouble of building an AI stack when I could just use a traditional if this then that pipeline?
It's a fair question. But the limitation of traditional automation is rigidity. Tools like Zapier or N8N operate on strict conditional logic. Step one must flow perfectly into step two.
Right.
If a file name is slightly different than expected, or a variable is missing, the entire pipeline crashes and throws an error. It cannot adapt.
It's very fragile.
Exactly. But when you execute through a stacked LLM workflow, you gain dynamic execution.
Meaning you can change the rules on the fly.
Exactly. You could type slash crosspost, but add a caveat. You could say, run the crosspost command, but for today, ignore the LinkedIn step entirely and immediately publish these two specific videos as image carousels instead of scheduling them for later.
And a rigid pipeline would just break because it doesn't fit the hard-coded schema.
Right, it would just fail. But Claude understands the context of the exception. It bypasses the LinkedIn step organically, reformats the output into a carousel, and executes the immediate publish. It handles exceptions exactly like a human employee would.
Man, that is the difference between automated software and autonomous software.
It really is.
Okay, so we have built this incredibly robust, fully automated AI employee sitting on our laptop. What happens when you need to step away from your desk? You're out getting coffee and a critical bug pops up.
Yeah, the guide addresses the reality of modern, location-independent workflows too. While basic session syncing between desktop and mobile apps is standard, the real breakthrough for developers is a feature in Claude Code called Remote Control.
Now, running complex automation scripts or terminal commands from a mobile phone over a cellular network, I mean, that sounds terrifying from a security standpoint. How is this handled safely?
Well, the execution doesn't actually happen on your phone.
Oh, it doesn't?
No, the heavy lifting, processing the data, running the scripts, interacting with the code base, that happens entirely locally on your secure machine at your home or office.
Okay, so what does the phone do?
Your mobile device acts strictly as a secure pager and approval interface.
A pager.
Yeah. So if you trigger a massive code base refactor from your phone, Claude Code will do the work on your laptop. But before it commits any changes or executes an irreversible command, it pings your phone with a summary of the action.
I see.
You have to tap to approve or deny the action. So you maintain absolute granular control over the execution environment without needing to be physically present at the keyboard.
So you kick off a massive data processing job at your desk, go grab lunch, and just tap approve on your phone when it hits a milestone and needs permission to proceed.
Exactly. It keeps the momentum going.
That is incredibly practical. But the guide is very realistic in its final section. It includes a heavy dose of reality they call putting in the reps.
Yeah, this is the necessary friction of adoption, because you cannot passively consume your way to becoming a power user.
Right.
Understanding the theory of MCP or listening to us explain dynamic execution is like watching a marathon on television. It does not mean you can run one.
Definitely not.
The people who are successfully saving 30 hours a week have gone through a lot of failure to get there. They've overloaded their context windows, they've built skills that hallucinated wildly, and they have absolutely accidentally deleted branches in GitHub.
But the guide argues that the friction is the actual learning mechanism, right?
It is.
Every time Claude hallucinates a deprecated library, you learn exactly how to refine your constraints. Every time a custom skill misinterprets an instruction, you learn how to adjust the claude.md file to permanently prevent that specific misunderstanding in the future.
The failure builds the resilient system.
It does, and the progression has to be deliberate. You don't start by trying to build a complex multi-application MCP workflow on day one. You start with the fundamentals.
Keep it simple at first.
Right. You implement the prompt template. You append the clarifying questions line to force alignment. Yeah. Then next week, maybe you try using the AI as a sparring partner to stress test an architecture decision. Then you build your first custom markdown file to establish basic memory. You just layer these techniques sequentially.
It's all about stacking small wins.
Exactly. So to summarize the journey of this deep dive, we started by moving away from treating AI like a glorified search engine.
Yeah.
We walked through establishing persistent memory, breaking tasks into repeatable custom skills, mitigating risk by spending 90% of our time in plan mode, and finally, deploying MCP to give the intelligence the digital hands it needs to execute autonomously across our entire tech stack.
It really represents a profound shift in our relationship with software and execution. Uh-huh. And, you know, if we pull back and look at the broader implications of these 12 techniques, it raises a critical, perhaps uncomfortable question for the future.
Oh, What is the question?
Well, think about it. If you successfully implement this entire stack, if your customized AI employee is flawlessly handling your research, perfectly writing and reviewing your boilerplate code, and completely automating your distribution pipelines across every platform via MCP, what exactly does your own role as a developer or a creator evolve into? When the actual doing of the work is entirely automated, does your daily job cease to be about creation and become entirely about curation and taste?
Wow, that is a phenomenal thought to leave on.
Uh-huh.
Transitioning from the person writing the code to the person simply tasting the code.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. To everyone listening, don't just sit on this information. Open your terminal or your browser and start building your very first custom skill right now. We will catch you on the next deep dive.